What's the source of wisdom? How can you live a more conscious life? Sometimes it's the questions that bring you your own quantum leaps. Wisdom Talk Radio brings you conversations with visionary thinkers, business mentors, and provocative authors and teachers, along with resources that point the way for you to claim your potential in service to the world. Join Laurie Seymour at Wisdom Talk Radio for explorations in conscious living. Subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite podcast or find us at Wisdom Talk Radio on Facebook.
Well, hello there and welcome back to the Sensitivity Doctors. What an amazing episode we had today. Something that I actually was reminded of as part of my legal history. The unbelievable topic of ethics, values, and fairness. We were so lucky to have Malaika Mims on the podcast today. She's a dynamic social worker, leader, therapist, educator, podcaster. This conversation, we really just dug into what do we see fairness as? How would we define that? And what does that look like to different people? And it was so interesting to also see the interaction between Dr. Amelia Kelly and Malaika. They had some really interesting views to share on this. And of course, me popping in between with all my little interesting ethical legal stories. Welcome to the Sensitivity Doctors Podcast. Here we explore everything from overcoming anxiety to living in a world not always designed for our sensitive wiring. Whether it's navigating business, parenthood, overcoming trauma, or getting what you want out of your relationships, we invite you to this empowering journey of self-compassion and growth. Sit back, relax, and here are your hosts.
Welcome, everyone. We are so excited to have our fabulous guest here today, who I have had the honor of being on her podcast before. And I really loved how like honest and energized and reachable you were and are to your students, to your clients, and to the people who get to enjoy your podcast. So welcome, Malaika.
Thank you. It's great being here.
Yeah, thank you for coming. So you are, and I feel like I relate to you in a lot because we both love doing basically anything that has to do with psychology at all, or helping or any of that. So you are a seasoned therapist and professor of ethics at Boston University, and you often help clients and students navigate ethical issues. So I was curious if you could unpack for our listeners what you believe is a common misconception about ethics, and maybe if there's anything you want people to understand for the context of our episode today on fairness.
Yeah. So I love how you make the connection with ethics and fairness. So often I think people are, well, first of all, ethics is one of my favorite subjects. And, you know, I think I, you know, people are like, look at me with this face, like, huh? How is that so? Like, I think a lot of people sometimes are intimidated by ethics. When you hear the word ethics, you know, you have an ethics commission or you have an ethics, you know, panel or something like that at the workplace. You know, I think people may get intimidated. And I can understand why in some ways. But, you know, as I, you know, teach ethics and from a social work perspective lens, it's a whole different ballgame for me. And so one of the I think to answer your questions, one of the most common misconceptions about ethics is it's like, it's solely about following a strict set of rules or guidelines. And that's not ethics. That's not ethics at all. I mean, there are some things that are within our guidelines as professionals that we have to follow, but it's not always so clear. It's not always like, you know, there's a lot of gray area in ethics. And so with that, you know, when you're making ethical decisions, you often have to balance so many different lens. And so you have to consider different perspectives, just different courses of action. Sometimes you can, you know, in an ethical dilemma, per se, you could go, you know, two different ways, right? And trying to make a decision. And either way you go, it could be like not good, right?
Right. But someone loses.
Yeah, you know, you still have to weigh that out and kind of determine what makes sense. And that's the part of ethics that I do like, because you have to kind of explore like different perspectives, different routes, different theories, different tools that you have to kind of bring in. And so when you bring in an aspect of fairness, right? Fairness is a thing that, you know, for me, fairness could look like one way for me, but for you, Dr. Kelly, it could look like something else, right? And Jean, it could look like something else for you, know, for you. So within ethics, you have to consider all those different things when you're making a decision. And so, you know, I think that's the part about ethics that people really don't understand. It's like, you know, it's the scary thing, but it doesn't have to be scary. Mm-hmm. Thinking about multiple perspectives is actually a good thing. It actually helps you come to like a more comprehensive approach or solution to problems or issues versus, you know, this one kind of way of doing things. That's kind of part of the old capitalist historical system that we're trying to break down anyways. So, you know.
Yeah, I remember in law school, well, not law school, but when we did our attorney's admissions exam. So it's this 2 days of just writing for really brutal exams. And one exam is 4 hours ethics. And everybody, that was what everybody stressed out the most about, because it just, everybody felt like it was just impossible to win at that exam. Like, doesn't matter what you say, it's going to be incorrect. And I think one of the things was because, exactly as you just said, ethics mean different things to different people in different situations. Like, it's not a black and white thing. So to try and write an exam about something like that is really difficult. And I remember that most of the people who failed and had to go back for an oral exam usually failed ethics because it was so difficult.
They didn't have you as a teacher.
Right. That part, right? And the aspect, we as social workers, we have to take the licensure exam as well. There's a few different licensure exams we have to take. But at the independent level and the master's level, there's a major ethics component. And rightfully so, the same as the law piece, many people do horrible on that part. Mm. And a lot of the decision, I think, and here's the part about fairness, right, that I want to connect. You know, social workers, we have a code of ethics that we all have to follow. And I'm also part of the National Association of Black Social Workers. So we also have an additional code of ethics that we have to follow. But ethics is really a guiding principle. It's our guiding light. But what I noticed that a lot of people don't do so well on those exams, especially marginalized groups, because when you're thinking about perspectives, you know, the exams historically have been written, you know, with the lens of the dominant narrative, right? Mm. And so that's where the fairness comes into play, where when you're thinking about decision-making, you know, and people are taking an ethics exam, many marginalized communities, marginalized populations often, you know, do poor on the exam. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of information and statistics around that, which they're trying to kind of take away the exam portion because of, you know, they're realizing that ethics is hard. And those aspects in the exam make it difficult for people to get licensure. So, you know, that's something that it's in Massachusetts, it's called there's this bill that they try to put in place, the social workers, and it didn't really go through yet. But, you know, people are really trying to change the aspects of exams, and, you know, and because we realize that people think so different, you know, and answer things different. So I love ethics. I will say that. And I try my best to, you know, be an ethical, you know, make ethical sound decisions. And so I'm always thinking and looking at multiple lens, which makes it hard when you're kind of a sensitive person, right?
Well, I was going to say, I mean, that's one of the things that we really were excited to talk to you about today, is the ideal is that everyone would think in the way that you're speaking about. But the reality is that some people are very black or white, or they do have tunnel vision about choices and or life in general. Mm-hmm. So how do you go about helping, whether it be your students, or I would imagine you see this a lot in your practice, people who come up against fairness, whether it be in society, whether it be because they're marginalized, whether it just be something in their family, to cope with this? Like, what would you tell our listeners are thinking patterns or maybe different ways of approaching things that feel unfair?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's really important, I think, to kind of navigate your own style and kind of learn your style. And so depending on, you know, how you, you know, what lens you're looking at things is going to determine, you know, the outcome. You know, beliefs are really powerful, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think when one of the things I tell students, you know, clients, just peers, family members and stuff, you know, it's, I guess it's okay to have your own process, but I do encourage people to just think outside the box, just think differently. And one of the things I know is that a lot of people in my field are very sensitive, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, we often, I feel like when you are dealing with ethics or you're dealing with especially highly sensitive people or just in general.
Did you take the test? Are you?
I did.
And Where did you fall?
I am an HSP.
Okay. Woo, welcome to the club.
According to the test, right? But, you know, hold on. Pause for a second. Go back to the question. Ask me the question one more time. Sorry.
I painted you into an impossible corner because I'm basically asking you, how do people who come up against unfairness.
Gotcha.
Hope. And maybe I can give you a context. I have quite a few clients who have encountered trauma early on in their life. Mm-hmm. And I have one in particular that I'm thinking of who she was, you know, marginalized within her own community in the country that she lived in before she moved here in her, you know, later childhood. And now as a 60-year-old woman, she is hyper focused on fairness. And when things feel unfair or when she feels like she's not vindicated, it really, really grades her. And so it brings to mind that she experienced unethical treatment early on in her formative years. And it has formed this like shell of, you know, not resistance to being outside the box, but kind of like she really struggles with being outside the box. And so I was inspired by thinking of these people that I work with when wanting to ask you, someone who focuses so much on ethics and fairness, like how you would help someone who thinks that way or feels stuck in that way.
Yeah. So when you've had a bad experience or a traumatic experience or just, you know, when you're dealing with, you know, microaggressions or feeling marginalized or mistreated, you know, you can feel a sense of powerlessness. Mm-hmm. Or a sense of, you know, like you don't have control. But one of the things I realized is I was working with someone recently and they experienced something maybe similar, you know, similar context as your client. And it wasn't the issue that what she experienced was actually bad. But what was the even harder part for her was that she was invalidated. Mm. Like when she tried to talk about it with other people or go get help or seek help and support, everyone kind of invalidated her, like, oh, you know, that's not what really happened. Or
they gaslit her.
You know, I think that's, you know, you're just, you know, looking at this the wrong way. And and so the first thing I think is people need to be validated, right? Mm-hmm. And feel validated. So I do try to validate people. And I always tell people, and one of the biggest things I tell my clients and people in general is like, nobody can't tell you how to feel. Mm-hmm. Right? Like nobody can't tell you how you should feel about something. Mm-hmm. Now they can give advice. They can tell you, oh, you know, maybe you can look at this thing different, but they can't tell you how you feel. So when someone tells you, you shouldn't feel that way, or your feelings are wrong, like that's invalidating the person and putting them and isolating them and putting them in a box. So someone who's already maybe perhaps a victim now gets re-victimized when they go seek help and support from peers or community, or even an ethical kind of supervisor or whatever. So I think when you're thinking about fairness, first we have to validate people. You know, that's the first thing, right? Because when you feel validated, now you feel a sense of connection. Now you feel a sense of belonging. Mm-hmm. And so that person that you're talking about perhaps never got validated, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right? No one ever stopped and listened to her. That's the worst thing. Can you imagine going through some trauma and then someone telling you that didn't happen to you and you shouldn't feel that way? That's the worst thing in the world.
Make you feel crazy. Yeah.
Yes. Right? Mm-hmm. So I think, first of all, validation is important because that brings a level of fairness too. Mm-hmm. And again, you can't tell someone how to feel.
Right.
The second part is that, you know, the reason why she probably got hyper-focused is because she's constantly trying to prove, look what happened to me. Mm-hmm. see this thing. And she's searching for evidence and trying to explore those aspects so people can see. And so she can validate for herself, like, I did go through this. I know I went through this thing. And so, first of all, again, validating people is really important. But the second thing is helping them kind of shift their mindset, right? A little bit. And not shift and say, you know, change what happened to you, but also like, how do you move forward? What can we do as healthy? What can you do that's healthy for your functioning? Because you can't start to, you know, spiral. Mm-hmm. When something happens to you and you feel deeply, because I know I feel deeply. And sometimes I can come out as like anger, frustration and stuff. Like when people do things that are really, you know, they don't follow, they don't have a sense of morality, you know, in their actions. And that really is hurtful and painful, right? And so sometimes you know, we want to change the world and systems, but your friend or the person that you're talking about, perhaps, you know, she has to realize like your role too in changing things, because we can't change everything. Mm-hmm. We can't make people listen to us and feel us and things like that. So sometimes it's a good balance too.
Right.
Because if you don't have some, like, It's okay to, you know, advocate for yourself, and but sometimes you gotta take a step back, relax a little bit, take a nap, because it will, you know, take
a nap. That's our prescription, folks. Take a nap.
Because, listen, when somebody do you wrong, you know, it's almost like a vengeance. You wanna you now your whole life comes, you know, this thing becomes centered.
Yes.
And so if you take a step back, you know, you come back to yourself. I was just talking to someone too the other day, and we were trying to explore like why this person is so angry, or did they have tension from a past situation, because we wanted them to show up to something in a different way. And I, you know, at first I was like, I was noticing that the person's behavior was off, and I was like, why are they acting like this? And you know, you try to figure it out, right? Like, why are they being like this? And then I had to tell myself, I said, you know what? I'm only going to give myself a day to think about this. And then tomorrow I'm going to move forward. Because I will, if I don't, I'll be sitting here trying to figure out and explore why somebody is acting or behaving the way they are toward me. And
that's impossible.
I won't be able to be on this podcast this morning, right? I'm calling someone, talking about it all night. I wouldn't be focused. So validation, and then redefining, you know, power, you know, because we have to empower people. Mm-hmm. And when someone feels like someone's been, that has hurt them, they feel powerless. They feel helpless. Mm-hmm. So finding ways for them to strategically feel empowered, but also having a good balance of being able to kind of step away too.
Right.
You know, and helping them find some control back in their life. That is, I guess that would be the approach I find for fear, you know, to go to fearness. Because it's not fear also for you to be a victim or be harmed and then find yourself encapsulated in this thing all day and in your harm all day. That's also not fair to you too.
I know. I sometimes say to clients that doing that is like having an apartment in your room or in your brain that you're like renting out for free to this other person, and they don't even know they're paying, they're living there. Yep. And you know, to your point, I love that you highlighted the piece of validation and reframing. And I can almost see where many people won't, unfortunately, find validation outside of themselves. You know, they might not have. We know it is a huge crisis in our country that there's a shortage of therapists. You might not have, you know, the support of family, or you might be consistently being gaslit.
Right.
And so I think that's where a lot of the reparenting or the inner child work or internal family systems, if someone has a therapist, or you can jump on YouTube. Everyone listening, you can jump on YouTube and put internal family systems meditations. And you can get to work doing some really valuable self-therapy today. I would not recommend, you know, trying to work through extreme instances of dysregulation this way. You want to be safe and do it with someone. But the self-work of validation is very important as well. I think that's something, and I think it can be empowering to your point. If we're not only receiving validation externally, but there's a way to find that within ourselves, that can be really powerful, because sometimes no one in your vicinity is going to validate you the way that you so eloquently reinforced and how important that is.
Yeah. And sometimes, you know, I work with a lot of people who, you know, who have trauma, you know, who, who are seeking that validation, right? And living a cycle of trying to, you know, this repeated cycle of seeking out validation from their, you know, victimized, their, you know, their abuser or people who have done them wrong, and, or, you know, it could be their mother, their family member, brother, sister, cousin, best friend, teacher. And, you know, I say, you know what, you may never get validation from that person, you know, probably, you know, it's likely you may not, you know, mm-hmm. not the way you want to sometimes. And so I try to really help people find, you know, the power within themselves to validate theirself unapologetically, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. You know, validate yourself. And then everything, you know, it's interesting when you validate yourself, you know, everyone else follows along like, oh, you know, they
good point.
They listen to you more. They, mm-hmm. you know, they follow you. You feel, you know, it's a sense of confidence that, you know, mm-hmm. you exuberate when you validate yourself. But when you don't invalidate yourself and you know, kind of shy away from things, people will try to harm you even more, you know?
I know. It's so unfair.
Yeah. It's so unfair that people will take advantage. But yeah. Part of it is human nature too, in some ways, right? Mm-hmm. The bad side of human nature of like, you know, you think what people would do help you more, but people do help, but there's a lot of people that aren't so nice. And that don't care, right? So, you know, I always
And they see it as a weakness when they see yes. that you can't, yeah, go. They're like, oh, okay, I can press this button. Yeah.
Yes. And that's bad. And it could be people that are close to you too. I mean, I think we all probably experienced that at some point of our life when we dealt with weakness and, or what was perceived as weakness, but, and or vulnerable moments. And, you know, people that were close to us took advantage of us. You know, we shared with them our confidence secrets and stories, and somehow that got back to us, or they took advantage mm-hmm. of that information. Mm-hmm. So it happens to us all. And at some point, if it hasn't happened to you, it will, you know? But even with that, you know, I told someone, I got a lot of stories, but I told someone one day, this girl was dating this guy and they broke up, and he was like, I'm going to share all your videos with us in the world. And I was like, she was, you know, hurt and sad, and she was scared, and she was anxious for days. And I was like, so we talked about some empowering strategies, what she could do to protect herself. And I think there was a point where it wasn't a client, it was just a friend and stuff, but we were just talking about it. But I think there was a point where she said, went back to the person and said, go ahead, share it with the world.
Right.
I'll just sue you. And in that moment, I guess the guy was like, oh, no, I was just joking. I would never do that to you. But when she exuberated confidence.
Right. You know, didn't give him her power.
Yes. It I was like that. Shift happened. But when mm-hmm. she was living in fear, it was like he had the control, and, you know, so it's interesting how things like that work out as well. I don't mm-hmm. know how we got there, but yeah.
No, but I mean, you were talking about personal stories. So I was curious. I mean, we're all kind of motivated. I know my own generational trauma and my own traumas are probably why I'm, you know, so into trauma therapy, and, mm-hmm. you know, you've been drawn to ethics. So I was curious, is there any, you know, anything in your own history that you would want to share that you think you've had to use some of these strategies to overcome feeling mm. like you were treated unfairly?
Everything. I mean,
yeah. Oh, we have it. Another hour.
But I think, you know, so here's this, right? So of course, I think we all have things in our history, but that have complex things, or, you know, have been traumatic for us. But see, here's the intersectionality of it, right? I'm a Black woman, right? Mm-hmm. And so those identities have been marginalized in the United States, you know, and so ways and oppressed. So when I show up with my identities, you know, I could be doing nothing and still find a way to experience, you know, microaggressions. I can experience unfairness, you know, just within policy and institutionalized racism in some ways. So, you know, it happens all the time in some ways. I, you know, working on jobs, you know, I've had to kind of navigate things in ways where, you know, sometimes you feel like hurt by things, the way things go, and, or relationships too, you know? So, mm-hmm. but I think because I have this lens, right. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I find ways to empower myself. I find ways to, recognize I can't control this whole system, right? The system mm-hmm. is very broken in many ways, and there are a lot of things that I don't have the physical power to change, but I also mm-hmm. look at it in a perspective of like, what do I have control over? What can I do? And even when something harmful happens or traumatic happens, I always say, okay, well, what can I do? How can I move mm-hmm. forward? And not let it overtake me or overcome me. And so I think I've experienced, so, I mean, I think we all have, but let me see. Oh man. Even in the hospital setting, when I had my first son, I had, you know, I had to have an emergency C-section, and just that experience where, you know, I was kind of like, not like my doctors didn't talk to me about what was actually happening. They kind of, you know, dismissed my questions, dismissed me in a way. And
that's such a vulnerable space and scary yeah. space too.
I mean,
that's terrible. Scary.
It's very scary. And, and I was by myself for a short period of time, and I didn't know what was going on. I was dismissed. I asked a lot of questions too, right? And I was still
as
dismissed.
You should.
and I was treated, I feel like, what was in ways, you know, there was some discrimination there, right? And mm-hmm. or there was, you know, treated with bias. And mm-hmm. it's weird how people treat you until they know like your credentials, right? And then they're like, oh no, mm-hmm. I didn't mean it like that. Oh mm-hmm. you're this thing or this person. They start mm-hmm. to treat you different. But until mm-hmm. then, you know, all they see is, okay, this is this Black woman sometimes, not everybody, but I'm saying, and in this essence, and, you know, that was hard to go through an experience like that. You know, number one, having children is one of, you know, it's a life, you're at risk.
It's altering, right? Yeah.
It's dangerous because you could lose your life potentially, or that child could. So that's another thing, right, that you're dealing with. Mm-hmm. That's, I mean, I don't know if people really realize that. So that's traumatic. Mm-hmm. Your body goes through trauma. Everything is happening all at once. But then here's the second part, where to be dismissed, to be invalidated by your medical team, you lose trust. Mm-hmm. And I know and like, even when you're dealing with pain, I had a lot of pain and it mm-hmm. would like kind of minimize my pain, and come to find out I had a whole blood clot and a C-section wound.
Oh my
gosh.
Yeah,
I had to get a cut open. It was okay. I don't want to talk about all that. But the point is, it was scary. But historically, you know, Black women have been mistreated in the medical yeah. field, and there is
for sure,
you know, data to support this. It's not like, you know, and so that is traumatic. So mm-hmm. how did I empower myself? Well, I had three other children, and so I had to find ways to, you know, get past that experience, and, you know, find doctors that were, you know, ethical. I asked questions before you even became mm-hmm. my doctor. Mm-hmm. I learned more about processes. I I held people accountable. I made sure I know, you know, how to hold people accountable when they're working with me. And I, you know, I tell them, I set boundaries and limits with the professionals I work with. And that has been empowering. That doesn't mean everyone just loves me as a client, but that means that I feel better about my experience when I go to the hospital, knowing that I have a little bit more control and and feeling more empowered.
You bring up a really good point, though, when it comes to ethics and fairness, that I don't know if we've highlighted quite as much yet, because we've talked about validating yourself or seeking validation from a, you know, supportive people. We've talked about reframing and seeing mm-hmm. things in different ways, which I would imagine, you know, experiencing the world like you just described, like being preconceived yeah. before you are even someone even gets to know you. Like, that just seems like the ultimate level of unfairness.
Oh, yeah.
But you bring up a good point, too, about this. If possible, if you are empowered to do so, you don't have to put up with unfair situations, or you don't have to put up with unethical situations in the future. I know sometimes within the moment, it's not possible to make these yes. huge changes. But the fact that you said, no, I'm going to empower myself to find a better medical team. I'm going to ask my questions Absolutely. Ahead of time. I'm going to vet the people who are going to be with me at my most vulnerable points. Mm-hmm. And I think this applies even to people looking for partners or friends. Oh, yeah. Like, oh, we yeah. can vet our people ahead of time, you know, make sure mm-hmm. that they have the ethical reactions that we find important. And oh, yeah. this leads me to the one other thing that I really wanted to ask you about, and that I know Dr. Jean and I were really interested in, is the fact that research does show that HSPs tend to have a very strong sense of morality, And mm-hmm. we actually sometimes can tend to project our morality onto others. And what I mean by that is, an example, if as an HSP, I'm very, very thoughtful about birthdays. I'm using a very easy example.
Yeah.
And I always think of what the person wants for a gift, and I put a lot of thought into it, and I give it to them, and they enjoy it. And then we kind of expect that other people are going to think this much about us and take mm-hmm. care of us as well. Mm-hmm. But then it doesn't always happen because, you know, people who are not HSPs are maybe not thinking about, you know, thinking so deeply about what you might like. How in your opinion, do you think this hits HSPs maybe harder or in a different way? And what do you think is helpful to do for highly sensitive people or empaths or people who kind of fall in the deep feeling category?
Yeah, well, this is a great question because, you know, highly sensitive people often do have a deep sense of morality, right? Mm-hmm. You may end up projecting, you know, a common term in, you know, in psychology is projecting your own ethical values onto others. And then when someone doesn't kind of reciprocate, you know, you may be offended or you may, and that may, you know, intensify feelings and, you know, like of sadness or anger or frustration or mm-hmm. you may feel like this person doesn't care for me or they're not loyal or whatever it may be. Right. Mm-hmm. And so you feel intense and you could take the perceived unfairness personally, while others might just brush it off easily. Right. And I ask people to take a look at their values. Mm. And this is what comes back to ethics too, because part of ethics is the value system. Mm-hmm. You know, like there, you know what makes a dilemma, an ethical dilemma, a dilemma? Do y'all know what makes it a dilemma? Mm-mm. What makes it a dilemma is that there's a clash of values, right? Mm. There's a clash of values that create this tension, that create, you know, this problem where you're like, you know, which way are you going to go, right? So, but that clash of values is important. And it happens every day within our relationships, our friendships, our work, you know, our working, you know, when we're working. And so I think it's really important to, number one, think about your own values. And mm-hmm. I don't think people actually do that. You know, mm-hmm. for my students, you know, as social work students, we give them a values screening and have them score their values and their priorities. Now, my values and your values change over time. Mm-hmm. Maybe 10 years ago or 15 years ago before I became a mother or before I became, you know, a professional social worker, right? My values were probably different. You know, I probably didn't value certain things the way I value now. Now I really value family. Now I really value security, right? Like, I want to make sure I'm secure. And I go in buildings nowadays. I mean, we've had so many crazy things happen in our country where security is a priority.
Yes, unfortunately.
So your values shift over time. And you need to be able to reflect on your values because your values are going to shape how you respond and engage and interact with the world. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because so here's the thing. A lot of people often, let me back up. I can take that value system of how the values clash creates tension and not only apply it in a professional sense, but apply it in relationships. Mm-hmm. So, when you're in a relationship, before you get in a relationship, ask questions about their values. Mm-hmm. Because that's where the problems actually stem from. Some people value, you know, do you value your health? Do you value, some people do value their health, but it looks different.
Well, right? It's interesting because based on what you're saying, I'm going back to my example about the birthday present. And it's, is my value the relationship or is my value the material item? Mm-hmm. And so in reality, the value is the relationship. So maybe instead of just getting so fixated on the unfairness of someone not acting exactly as thoughtful as I might, I can reflect on the relationship. And if the relationship, my main value is intact, maybe mm-hmm. I can let go of this other value of gift giving or thoughtfulness. Mm-hmm. And you know, something that as an HSP personally, where I come across this quite often, I sometimes give myself a little mathematic equation where I remind myself it's only a third of the population. So over two thirds of the people I encounter don't feel the way I feel or feel as deeply as I feel. And right. I have to remind myself that their perception is going to be very different than my perception.
Yes.
Right? Like I'm already planning Christmas gifts.
so that's the point I want to make. Like you, I love a birthday. I love a good birthday. Okay?
So we would be great at presents for each other.
Right. I love birthday parties. I just love. Even big or small, I just love. Like, I don't know. I've been doing that since I was a kid. I value that. So getting into a relationship now, I remember when I was in a relationship before, the person didn't really care about birthdays. So like when birthday time would come around, I'm like all, you know, excited and, you know, I'm like counting down and, you know, I celebrate the whole month and they're just looking at me like I'm crazy. But I'm like I'm taking that as you don't care about me or you don't care about the situation or, you know, so what that did was create tension.
Right.
Oh, can you see this person just gave me a little t-shirt? Like, what? How did you not give me like all the... And so, but my values have changed over time, right? So I don't, you know, but I think because like something as simple as that could create tensions within a relationship. So now you're looking at this person like, oh, they don't care about me. Oh, I do all these things for them. And when it's time for us to have events, they do nothing. You know, they don't show up for me like I show up. And that's where the problems start. So had you started the relationship off asking, hey, how do you feel about birthdays? And they'd be like, oh, it's not really a big deal. I'm like, well, this is big important to me. And we kind of negotiated that in a way that would kind of prevent down the line tension and problems. So that little thing, you know, that the tension that happens with value, people don't talk about their values. When you get in a relationship with your partner, you don't know what people been through childhood-wise. When you're planning on having children, ask questions. How do you feel about discipline? Because some people feel like discipline, they should discipline their kids in some harsh ways because that happened to them as a children.
Right.
And you may have said, well, no, we don't do that. I do discipline by taking away a phone. And so as a parent, as your kids are having problems and you want to discipline them, the other parent may want to cause, you know, spankings. And then one parent be like, no, that's horrible. And then that's where the tension happens.
Well, and it's interesting too, because, and gosh, I feel like we could have a whole nother conversation about ethics and values and fairness, but to kind of put it together, not just the ways to cope with it, but what forms our perception of fairness, it is our past experiences will inform what we find fair. And so like what you're saying, if someone was, you know, penalized or punished through corporal punishment or physical punishment or, you know, little things like, okay, they're not little, like big, I would think I was in my mind thinking of like lesser forms of physical, you know, reprimanding, that's what they see as fair. Whereas someone who did not have parents or caregivers who did that will not see that as fair. So I love what you're saying that, you know, for highly sensitive people or any of us who feel that fairness is a huge issue for us, so that we're having a hard time comprehending it, check back in on your values and check back in on your perception and where your idea of fairness came
from. Absolutely. It's a constant. It's constant. You can't just think that your values 10 years ago are the same today. So you have to constantly do that. And when you engage in relationships, discuss their values too. Ask questions about their values. Nobody does that. Nope. Who's going into relationships? So what do you value? You don't have to
see. Because people go into relationships frightened of being alone, frightened of being disappointed, frightened of not being loved. So don't ask the difficult questions, because this may mean that this is then not perhaps not going to work out for me.
That's true. That's true. And that's another layer of psychology we have to dig into, right? Like, why would someone would walk into something like that? And a lot of people do walk into relationships, you know, like that. But if we could take this different perspective, think about how different your life would be. Because if you knew somebody's values from the beginning, you may not even choose to engage or move forward. When I start a job or a program, I can't go to a job or a program whose values don't align with mine. because I'm going to be unhappy. I'm going to be miserable.
Well, and to your point, I do encourage anyone listening, and I've talked with my clients about this before, play your poker hand. Like, put your hand out, see how the person across the table reacts.
Yes.
And you'll get an idea whether or not what you see as fair and what they see as fair aligns. And it won't be 100% across the board, but do the big things align? And yeah. So if our listeners want to keep hanging with you, honestly, because I feel that's what I yeah. love about your podcast, Drop a Jewel, is that you're just like, hey guys, let's just be together. That's my favorite part.
Yes.
Where can they find all the good stuff about you and follow your work and maybe even reach out for help if they want?
Yeah, for sure. I am so like, I connect with people. I am not that person that says, oh my God, do not text me. Do not call me. I am about the people. I love people and I love connecting with people. If you go to my website, dropajewelmaleka.com, of course, you can find more information. I do workshops and trainings. I do therapy. And I also podcast. So I'm sure there's something in there that would fit for you. Or I'd also mentor other professionals. So, but my email is there. My phone number is there. And, so contact, you can drop me a inquiry and all that stuff. I'm on social media. So I'm on Instagram and TikTok. TikTok, right? But I'm on all those, I guess, platforms. And also, it's Drop a Jewel with Maleka on those platforms. But my website is Drop a Jewel Maleka. So, and then Perfect. Also, I think, where else am I at? I think, yeah, that's on LinkedIn, right? If you, everybody. But yeah.
And we'll have the links for everybody in the show notes as well. If you miss that at all, you can also go into the show notes and find the links to redirect you where you need to go.
Yeah, awesome. Thank you so much. I know we hit you hard with some pretty complex questions today. So maybe we were a little unfair. I don't know.
No, I'm here for it. I'm here for it. So no, you're totally fair. And it just flows naturally and organic, right? Like when you do this work and my mom said to me yesterday, it was 9 o'clock. She said, can you stop talking? it was not unfair. It was, I always have a ball with you and awesome. Such a pleasure to meet you.
Yeah, so good to see you again.
Yes,
I'll come hang with you again too. All right. Bye, hon.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of The Sensitivity Doctors. Please be sure to share our video clips on socials and ask your friends to rate and review this podcast.
Yes, sharing these videos makes it possible for your favorite podcast to move up on the ranks so that other people can find it, share it, and learn from it too. So if you can share today, we would really appreciate it.